I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are very much enriched in understanding of Lord Chaitanya and who are thus expert in narrating his transcendental qualities. They can purify all conditioned souls from the reactions of their sinful activities by pouring upon them transcendental songs about Govinda. As such, they are very expert in increasing the limits of the ocean of transcendental bliss, and they are the saviors of the living entities from the devouring mouth of liberation. So we continue reading in the Pachwami Ashtakam. When Kishan was reading that quote from Prabhupada, I remember that Prabhupada once said that I want 25 men in Vrindavan who are just like the Goswamis to manage our Krishna Balaram temple. So if I get 25 men who are just like the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, then from the purity of this running of the Krishna Balaram temple, this mission will be a success. So of course, we can never be on that level of the Goswamis, but we can aspire to try to emulate some of these qualities. So here in this third verse, Srinivasacharya is glorifying the six Goswamis. He says they are very much enriched in understanding Lord Chaitanya and who are thus expert in narrating his transcendental qualities. So, the Goswamis were always aware of Lord Chaitanya's divinity. Most people at that time, or many people at that time, and many people after Lord Chaitanya, believed Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just to be a saintly person. Just someone, an apostle of love of Godhead, a great saint, a sadhu. Not everyone could understand his divinity. Before Rupa and Sanatan even met Lord Chaitanya at Ramakali, they had dreams about Lord Chaitanya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to them in the dreams and told them that, you know, I have so many tasks for you to accomplish, and very soon I will come to meet you. So like that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was coming in their dreams even before they met him. And in that way, Rupa and Sanatan were writing letters to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and requesting him that we want to come and see you, we want to come and meet you. And then finally we know that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to Ramakali and met Rupa and Sanatan. But they could understand immediately that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because of course we know that the identity of the six Goswamis ontologically in the spiritual world is that the Goswamis are Manjaris, so the Nitya Siddha Eternal Associates. Although anyway, Srila Prabhupada writes a letter where he says that Rupa, Raghunath, they were Nitya Siddhas, the other Goswamis were Sadhana Siddhas. But anyway, we won't get into that controversy today. That's for another day. So to understand Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's divine identity, one time there was one young man in India, and he was a spiritual searcher. And he had read many, many books, and he came to understand that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was Krishna himself who had come in Kali Yuga. He had not had contact with the ISKCON movement, but he had come to this conclusion that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in fact God. But of course, at that time in India, many people, no one had this understanding. So he was struggling to find other people who had this understanding that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Person. Then he came across ISKCON. This was in the 70s. Building up the suspense. So then he came across ISKCON and finally thought, my God, finally, like a group of people who know about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So then he got hold of Srila Prabhupada's books and he was in ecstasy to read Srila Prabhupada's books because Prabhupada was very much establishing the divinity of Gauranga. So then finally he was in Lucknow. So then he thought, I will go and try and meet the devotees. So he went to meet the devotees and he said, I want to meet Srila Prabhupada. And the devotees said, Prabhupada's just left, he's going to Gorakhpur. So if you want to go and see Srila Prabhupada, you have to go there. So he said, yeah, I'll go there. So he immediately took a train to Gorakhpur and then he went to the place where the devotees were staying. So he walked into this building and there was an old man sitting behind the desk. So he said to the old man, he said, I want to see Srila Prabhupada, I want to see Bhaktivedanta Swami. So this man kind of looked at him and he said, well, why do you want to see him? He said, because this man is amazing. He has gone across the world and he has taught people that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is an amazing feat. He has fulfilled the prophecy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this old man behind the desk, he goes, what do you mean Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is God? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is just a saint. So this young man, he said, no, no, I've done a lot of reading into this stuff. I've read Srila Prabhupada's books. And I understand that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not just the saint, he's God. This old man goes, no, 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 you're mistaken. So then they started having a full-blown argument. He's saying, no, no, he is God. The old man behind the desk is saying, no, no, he's not God. And you know, finally it got like, it was nearly like swearing at each other. It got really passionate. So as they were shouting like this, all the devotees ran into the room. And then all the devotees ran into the room and they paid obeisances to this man, this old man. So then this guy who had walked in coming to see Srila Prabhupada, he was bewildered. Like, how is it that they're paying obeisances to this old man? And then the old man behind the desk, he started laughing. And then he looked at all the devotees and he was laughing and they were saying, you know, what's happening here, what's happening here? And he looked at all the devotees and he said, this man has faith. This man has faith that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is God. And then he realized that this old man behind the desk was actually Srila Prabhupada. And that's how he met Srila Prabhupada. And then that person became Radha Govinda Maharaj. That's how he met Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada was just joking around with him. And he ended up like swearing at Prabhupada. Oh, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is God. And Prabhupada was very happy. He said, yes, this is very good. Someone who has faith that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is God. So here the six Goswamis, they were very much enriched in understanding Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, knowing that he was actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if anyone wants to ascertain who is an incarnation, then you can do through the acronym SAFE. If you want to know who's a safe God, then there's four major things. S stands for scripture. They have to be predicted in scripture. A stands for astrology, or, you know, there's certain markings on their body, there's certain astrological constellations that take place when an incarnation appears. F stands for follow the acharyas, because maybe we can't read all the scriptures and maybe we don't know all the astrological configurations, but if we follow the acharyas who have scrutinized these other two things, then we can understand that the person is the incarnation of God. And E stands for extraordinary activities. So, anyone who's claiming to be an incarnation, must have these four things. So of course in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's case we see that all of these things are there. So the Goswamis are very much enriched in understanding of Lord Chaitanya and who are thus expert in narrating his transcendental qualities. So therefore, knowing that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the Supreme Person, the Goswamis and their followers began to narrate and give the world understanding of all of the activities and qualities of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There's two major diaries or biographies of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One is the Chaitanya Bhagavat, which is written by Vrindavan Das Thakur. And the other is Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is written by Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. So as we know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's life is 48 years, 24 years as a householder, 24 years as a renunciate. So Chaitanya Bhagavat focuses on the first 24 years, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in Navadvip and he's performing many different pastimes. Because the first half of Lord Chaitanya's life was primarily recorded by Murari Gupta. So if you go to Mayapur, you can even go to Murari Gupta's place. Then Murari Gupta was a physician, he was a schoolmate of Lord Chaitanya, and he had many intimate pastimes, and he recorded everything that happened. So, remembering some pastimes? So he had many pastimes with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Vrindavan Das Thakur based Chaitanya Bhagavat upon the diaries of Murari Gupta. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas and took up residence in Jagannath Puri, then Swarup Damodar came to Jagannath Puri and became the personal secretary to Lord Chaitanya. And therefore Swarup Damodar had many diaries. And those diaries contain information of what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did in his sannyas years. So those are the diaries that Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami used to write the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So like this, these are considered the two major biographies of Lord Chaitanya which narrate all his activities and character. Of course there are others, Chaitanya Mangal, Chaitanya Charita, there's many different. Prabodhananda Saraswati also wrote a biography of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But these two are considered the main two diaries of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So the Goswamis are very much enriched in understanding of Lord Chaitanya and who are thus expert in narrating his transcendental qualities. They can purify all conditioned souls from the reactions of their sinful activities by pouring upon them transcendental songs about Govinda. So this was very much part of Vaishnava culture, to take the philosophy that is contained within the Bhagavatam, within all of our scriptures, and to then turn them into songs of devotion. These songs are very powerful. They are able to reawaken the emotion and the natural devotion within us towards Krishna. And therefore we see that all the great acharyas, they not only composed songs, but they spent many, many hours singing the songs which contain the essence and the conclusions of all the scriptures. Sometimes we see that Srila Prabhupada, he would just in his room have a harmonium and he would just sing for many, many hours sometimes, alone sometimes. No recordings, nothing. He would just sit in his room and sing these songs which were giving us so much insight into the deep emotions that the great devotees were feeling in their relationship with Krishna. One time Srila Prabhupada, you may have seen that video, he's in a recording studio and he's playing mridanga. And all the devotees are around and they're singing different Vaishnava bhajans. And then Prabhupada just stops and he's got this mridanga in front of him and he just says, "This is how my father wanted me to be." He said, "My father never wanted me to be a big lawyer or to be so successful in this world. My father, whenever any saint would come, he would just pray to them, tell them, pray that my son would become a servant of Srimati Radharani. So he said, my father, he just wanted me to learn mridanga and play songs and sing songs and worship Krishna. And so Prabhupada was there with the mridanga and he was remembering that actually this is life, you know, just to sing about Krishna. One time Mother Jamuna, she asked Srila Prabhupada, what is your favorite song? Anyone know what he replied?
Hari Hari.
He said, Hari Hari Bifale Janama Gwanai. The song by Narottam Das Thakur, he said, this is my favorite song. And Narottam Das Thakur is saying, Hari Hari Bifale Janama, I've wasted my whole life. Gwanai, because I knowingly drunk poison by not worshipping you. But like this, in this whole song, Narottam Das Thakur is unfolding the story. The lamentation of a devotee that they haven't served Krishna enough. So Prabhupada said, that's my favorite song. So like this, Srila Prabhupada would sing songs, and the Goswamis, they composed many songs. Actually, we don't sing so many of the songs of the Goswamis. We sing mainly the songs of Narottam Das Thakur and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But the Goswamis also did write many songs. They wrote many ashtakams and many prayers. And of course, we know that not only did they write songs, but they wrote dramas. So Rupa Goswami, he wrote two major dramas about Krishna's pastimes. One was Lalita Madhav and the other one was Vidagdha Madhav. Vidagdha Madhav was about Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan and Lalita Madhav was about Krishna's pastimes in Dwarka. So like this, they were expert in understanding Lord Chaitanya, Lord Krishna, the intricacies of rasa, and then documenting those in songs and dramas. And therefore, Rupa Goswami was known as the Rasacharya, the one who understood the deepest mellows of Krishna consciousness. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had invested that Shakti within him to be able to do that task. So like this, the Goswamis, as is said in this, that number one, they were... I'll just finish off one line and then we'll take questions. So number one, they were expert in understanding Lord Chaitanya. Second thing is they were expert in narrating all his qualities. The third thing is that they formulated many songs about Govinda. And then finally, Srinivasacharya says, as such, they are very expert in increasing the limits of the ocean of transcendental bliss, and they are saviors of the living entities from the devouring mouth of liberation. So everyone is looking for ananda, everyone is looking for happiness, and happiness only comes from relationships. Anything that annihilates relationships annihilates the possibility of real happiness in life. So, it's like even if you have an argument with someone, then there's different things you can do, and one thing is you can just try and walk away from that person and then just keep a distance. And okay, that may create some peace in your life, you don't have to deal with the friction of what it means to relate to someone. But although it may bring a certain amount of peace, it doesn't really bring any positive happiness. So similarly, walking away from relationships and even a relationship with God, or walking away from any sense of variety of relationships for the impersonalist, that may bring a certain amount of peace, but it doesn't bring happiness, or ananda, which is what everyone's looking for. So the Goswamis kind of established that this impersonalism is not the ultimate, but the real depths of happiness are coming from a deep relationship with Krishna. And they showed that as one takes up the devotional process and as one begins to relate to Krishna, then one very quickly experiences this rasa of relationship with Krishna. And then liberation becomes very insignificant. Therefore, we were talking about last time that Rupa Goswami explains the effects of devotional service, that kleshagmi shubhada moksha laguta krit sudur laba sandrananda visheshatma shri krishna karshini chasa, that moksha laguta krit, the devotional service is so powerful and so relishable that it makes moksha laguta krit. Lagu means very small, so it means it makes it very, very tiny, like water in the calf's hoof print, insignificant, because ananda is much, much greater. Does anyone have any questions? London?
Just a couple of things. Firstly, there's two dramas that Rupa Goswami wrote. One was Lalita Madhav and the other one was?
Vidagdha Madhav.
Vedanta Madhav.
Vidagdha.
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 Okay. And the Goswamis, you said the various things they did. One was experts in understanding.
Lord Chaitanya. This is all in the third verse.
Okay, oh right, it's all there, narrating his glories and so on.
Yeah,
expanding the limits of Mahaprabhu's mercy or something.
Yeah.
And saviors of the living entities.
From the mouths of liberation.
Personal liberation.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
But when he wrote the dramas, I mean, when you say we write dramas, it's fictional, so this is something that's already happened and he's just writing it down? Or is it just kind of...
Yeah, of course, these are the dramas which are based upon Krishna's pastimes which are narrated in the Bhagavatam. So, of course, if you read the 10th canto, then we know, okay, Krishna spent the first 10 years of his life in Vrindavan, then he spent some years in Mathura, then the final 96 years of his life were in Dwarka. So, like, the first 40 chapters of Krishna book deal with Vrindavan, and there's some chapters on Mathura, and then the rest is all about Dwarka. So, Rupa Goswami took all of this information. But we also understand that because they were Manjaris themselves, that was their deeper identity, they were getting inner realizations about these pastimes, and therefore sometimes they were able to add details to these pastimes that were not narrated in maybe the Bhagavatam as we see it. So say, for example, someone like Jiva Goswami, he wrote a book called Gopal Champu. And Gopal Champu is like a book which is a commentary on the 10th canto, but is giving extra details behind the pastimes and things that were happening. So the Goswamis, because they were Manjaris, they were getting this inner realization and they were getting extra understanding. And of course they were directly connected to Krishna. Because when Rupa Goswami was thinking of writing those dramas, he was actually thinking of writing it as one big drama. And then he was travelling to Jagannath Puri to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he stopped at a place called Satyabhampur, which is where Satyabham, or one of Krishna's principal queens, where she was born, or her family village or something like that. And when he got to that village and spent one night there, then that night in his dream, Satyabham came to him in the dream and said that the rasa in Dwarka and the rasa in Vrindavan is different. It's a different mood, it's a completely different thing. So you shouldn't write this as one drama, but you should separate them and write two separate dramas. And then he went to Jagannath Puri and he said, I had this dream. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, yes, this is right, you should write as two separate dramas.
On the last line of this verse, so is it that if we are striving for liberation, we're limiting our ability to be happy? Is that the understanding, or is it that it's just they're not connected at all, it's just saying two different things?
So, if we're aiming for impersonal liberation, then are we limiting?
Yeah. What I'm saying is it connected? Those two statements, are they connected? Or
as such, they're very expert in increasing the limits of the ocean of transcendental bliss, and they are thus saviors of the living entities from the devouring mouth of liberation. Of course, liberation, there is no real concept of transcendental bliss.
Yeah.
Because as we know, liberation is, okay, going to the Brahmajyoti, and in that aspect of life, the only quality of the soul that we're fulfilling is sat, the quality of eternity, eternal existence. But there's no concept of ananda in the Brahmajyoti. So, transcendental bliss is something that really comes with personality, personal relationships. And therefore here when it's said that they are saviors of the living entities from the devouring mouth of liberation, is basically referring to the fact that liberation is like a it devours you because it annihilates your identity and your ability to experience this transcendental bliss. So impersonalism is not only limiting but is annihilating the concept of transcendental bliss, because it's not even there really.
And so can you just repeat what lagata krit means again?
Lagata krit means, krit means to do, and lagu means very small. So moksha labhuta krit means to make liberation seem very small. So when one takes up devotional life, then it makes liberation feel very insignificant.
Okay, labhuta means small and krit means to do.
Yeah. Lagu actually means small. Labhuta krit means like the Sanskrit vocabulary. Okay.
I was going to ask about vows, like, I'm finding it hard to think of like a vow that I can make. It. What's it like?
For karchi?
Yeah, like, worried like I'll break it and stuff, like, what should I do?
So you want to make a vow that you don't break?
Yeah, as in like, I just think like, even if I want to chant, like, I know it sounds like one round a day seems like, it's so easy, but like, even like last night I had rounds at night, so like, I'm just thinking like, if I make a vow and then break it, is that worse than just not making a vow, or like, if I can't keep up to it or something?
Yeah. No, of course, to make an endeavor is better than not making an endeavor. But yeah, you have to just try to do something which you feel you can fit into your schedule. Of course, to constantly make vows that we don't follow, then just like I was saying yesterday, if you make a small vow and you follow it, then it's like it's increasing your capacity to then, okay, do something bigger and bigger and bigger. So then it works the other way also. If you take constantly taking vows and then not following them, then it kind of reduces your capacity for determination, because you think like, oh, I broke that vow last time, so if I break this one, it's not such a big thing, you know. You have to be practical after all. You know, so like that, then you just have to be careful of that. So therefore, Rupa Goswami says in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that one should not make vows beyond one's ability. So that's definitely there. But then obviously the other extreme is then we don't try for anything. You know, and then we don't get anywhere. So, so just try to do something that's small enough that you can definitely do it. And then maybe have another one which is a little bigger, which you're also endeavouring to do, and if, okay, maybe you don't follow that, then, you know, because you're feeling that maybe too much, then keep that as another vow, but keep something that you definitely do, something small, you know, that you can definitely follow, that maybe it's not such a time-bound thing. Yeah, so certain vows is requiring time. Other vows may not necessarily require time, it's just the quality of consciousness that it requires. So maybe have a vow like that which you can't use any excuse for, in terms of, I don't have time, I won't be able to fit it in. There's different qualities of vows.
Just, it's not so really, but it's about Marga Prakash Lila.
What?
So, Swarup Dharana's diaries are the foundation of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Why would he not have entailed that part, that particular pastime, in his diaries?
Swarup Dharana wasn't in Navadvip at that time.
Yeah.
Before that, he was a sannyasi in another place, I can't remember where. But when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, then he came to join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri. So he wasn't witness to all of those pastimes. So therefore, he was witness mainly to the sannyas pastimes. Well, obviously, when Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami was compiling Chaitanya Charitamrita, then he also used other sources as well. But Vrindavan, Swarup Dharana was his main source of information. So that's why there is mention in the Chaitanya Charitamrita of Mahaprakash Lila. There is mention of Jagai Madai. There is mention of Chankazi, which are all pastimes which took place before sannyas, but not in so much detail. Okay. The detail that he got was for the Madhya and Antya Lilas, which is after sannyas.
Okay.
Just from that, basically what happened is that Swarup Dharana was with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so he wrote down all his diaries. Then if you remember, Raghunath Das Goswami ran away from home and he came to join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri. So when Raghunath Das Goswami came to Jagannath Puri to join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu put him under the care of Swarup Dharana. That's why another name for Raghunath is Swarupera Raghunath. Raghunath was under the care of Swarup Dharana. So Raghunath Das Goswami, every day Swarup Dharana would tell him, narrate to him the diaries of that he had written about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Raghunath Das Goswami got to know every single detail about what happened to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Yeah.
And then two very unfortunate things happened. The first is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left the world. The second thing was that Swarup Dharana then left the world. And then the third thing was that the diaries of Swarup Dharana also became lost. So now Raghunath Das Goswami was the only person on the planet who was still having all this information in his head. But what happened when Swarup Dharana left the world, then it was too much for Raghunath Das Goswami. So he thought, I can't, how can I live now? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has left, Swarup Dharana has left. There's no purpose to living anymore, I may as well just kill myself. So he went to Vrindavan, and in his mind he had this idea that I'll jump off Govardhan Hill and I'll kill myself, because the separation is too much to tolerate. And as he arrived in Vrindavan and he had this idea in his mind, then he came across Rupa and Sanatan, and they could understand his plan, and they said that, no, how can you do this? You know, you are the one who are carrying all this information about Lord Chaitanya. This needs to be documented for the benefit of the world. So then Raghunath Das Goswami took up residence in Radhakund, and in the same place in Radhakund, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami was there. And every day Raghunath Das Goswami would speak for 3 hours to Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami all these pastimes. And that's how he got the complete comprehension. So that's the line that Chaitanya Charitamrita is coming. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, narrated by Swarup Dharana, who narrated everything to Raghunath Das Goswami, who narrated everything to Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. And that's how the knowledge comes. Yeah.
Okay. I was thinking, I was just trying to think about yesterday we were talking about Prabhupada and what he wanted and things like that. And I was thinking, like, how do we understand exactly? Because when we read Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, it's like very principle based, like, but then when we see details, it's like his life, and someone will say, okay, Prabhupada did this one time, then how do we understand that? Because it may not be so apparent from the Bhagavatam that, okay, that's what should have happened. Like, I don't understand, like, okay, should we do this on this day? Or no, Prabhupada said do this. Like, how do we learn about Prabhupada? Is it mainly through, okay, Bhagavatam gives principles, do we mainly learn through his life, like what he would want, or
Yeah.
A bit confused.
Yeah, so scriptures is giving principles, and but how do we understand how to apply those principles? Therefore, Mahabharata is saying, you know, dharmasya tattvam nihitam guhayam mahajano yena kathasapanta. That Bhagavatam is saying that by your own logic and by your own understanding, tarko pratishta shrutayo vibhinna, by your own logic and understanding and intelligence, you cannot ascertain the intricacies of dharma or how to act. Bhagavatam says, dharmasya tattvam nihitam guhayam, that this dharma is actually hidden within the hearts of the devotees. Mahajano yena katasapanta. Therefore one should follow the Mahajans, because through their life, through their example, through their application, we can understand how principles should be lived out in the world today. So definitely we understand how to apply the principles through the life of Srila Prabhupada. And if we scrutinize Srila Prabhupada's life, then we can see that he was living the principles according to how Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj taught him and trained him. But what he was doing is he was taking the principles from his spiritual master, and as an acharya he was able to adjust certain things according to the climate of the day. Therefore it's very interesting when you read Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav that you see where Prabhupada got so many things from. But even though he got so many things from Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, many things he also adjusted. So the principles are coming from Krishna, then the first acharyas, they are putting that into practice and documenting it, how to actually practice it. So they're giving some form and some practicality to it. And then every subsequent link in the parampara is taking the same principles, preserving those principles, but then adapting things according to the time and the climate of the day. And like this, the Shastra has remained preserved and intact and authentic, but at the same time it's molded and dynamically given a form according to what's practical and what's achievable for that time and place. So therefore, yes, it's not enough to read Shastra, one must follow the devotees. And different devotees will have different realizations about how Shastra should be followed and how Shastra should be applied in today's day and age. And that's okay. That's okay. That's not a that's not wrong. Even acharyas are having different understandings of different philosophical points. So that's not a problem. But obviously for us, as followers of Srila Prabhupada, then Srila Prabhupada remains the final authority on any point of whether how a principle should be applied. And therefore we have to understand Srila Prabhupada as a person. And that's why even I was thinking, you know, some time ago that, okay, we've read Srila Prabhupada's books, but really we should be reading all of Srila Prabhupada's letters, all of his conversations, all of his diaries, because when you understand Srila Prabhupada as a person, then you're able to understand his mood wholesomely. Where some people, they just have a Prabhupada or a part of Prabhupada that they like, and then they see everything through that lens, and then it becomes skewed. You know, so we have to understand all aspects of who Srila Prabhupada was, and then, you know, and then in that way, then try to make some kind of conclusion as to how we practice the principle. So I think the points are that Shastra gives principle, Acharya gives the form and the practice. With every Acharya, the principles is preserved, but the form changes according to time and is adjusted. And for us, the Acharya, the final person, is Srila Prabhupada. So naturally, whenever there's some contention of how principles should be applied, we look to Srila Prabhupada. And in order to understand Srila Prabhupada wholesomely and as a person, then we need to draw on all of the resources we have to understand Srila Prabhupada. And then even many devotees who have drawn on all the resources and have understood still have their Srila Prabhupada, and another one has their Prabhupada, and that's okay, because we're all individuals and we see or have a different relationship. Just as everyone had a different relationship with Srila Prabhupada when he was on this planet. So even now Srila Prabhupada is gone and everyone relates to Srila Prabhupada in a different way. So that will be there, that's variety. Yes. Spiritual life is not devoid of variety.
Also, just to follow up on that, like, say for example, here at pastime of Prabhupada, that Prabhupada did this in this circumstance. How do you like understand it? Because it's like there's such a context behind it, but often we may not know the, like, I think Jay Bhai made that point, like when you read letters, you don't know what the letter was, you just get the response. So then how do you know, how do you like understand it? It's quite
You have to see, like, if you read many, many letters, then it's not that we should use single letters to prove a point, but we should use a weight and a kind of general mood that is coming across and use that more, rather than, you know, a single circumstance where Srila Prabhupada said this or that. We have to, like Baladev Vidyabhusan says, one verse should be taken in the context of a chapter. One chapter should be taken in the context of the book. And one book should be taken in the context of the entire body of knowledge. So contextual understanding is very, very important. And it's not a problem to refer to a pastime or refer to a letter, as long as, number one, it's taken in context, and number one, the different perspectives have been taken account, so that whatever presentation you're making on the basis of that one thing is a balanced presentation. So I think it's just a matter of reading everything and being able to see things in context.
So it's like, but it's not like you read a pastime and you try and relate it to what principles are applying here. And what, like, is that, do you like do that in your head, or do you just have to read all of it to really understand each one in itself? Because otherwise, you're just picking one, and if you remember the rest of it, you can't understand it all.
Yeah, but still, certain things we can. Certain things are revealing of certain aspects, like so then you can directly say, like, this links to this. But then on certain issues where Srila Prabhupada is clearly having different perspectives, you know, then we have to kind of take a step back and, like, be a bit, you know, be a bit mature about it, you know. Like someone saying, what pleases you the most? And then sometimes Srila Prabhupada is saying this if you distribute books, and sometimes Srila Prabhupada is saying if you become a pure devotee, and sometimes Srila Prabhupada is saying whatever you service you do, but if you do it with love and devotion. So then many perspectives are coming, and then one has to see all of those different things and try to understand what the spirit of it really is. Finish it. Chilo Prabhupada.